June 21, 2021, it's the Watford Pedro Show.
Look at it from the front and look at it from the back.
Yes. Bold
one. Look at this embroidery. Look at it from the front and look at it from the back. When you see the embroidery, you must look from the back and from the front.
Right.
It looks as good in the back as in the front.
He showed us the number. You couldn't see where the decimal point was.
Look at all these numbers.
Now, even if you pay me $10,000, you need to get another one like that. You cannot afford it. Just one thing. You can never get through the family. You can never get one another like that. But this is the top. There is nothing better than that it exists. Nothing better and greater than that. Especially for your new venture, I suggest you that take chance between 21st of June to 20th of August. 21st of June to 20th of August.
Okay.
This period.
Yes.
It's the best period for you. If you will take any chance for any new venture, especially on 6th, 15th and 24th.
Okay.
Then it will be best for you.
Okay.
Then I can say that nothing will happen wrong.
Okay.
Walk for Pedro show, happy Monday. Started off with John Coltrane doing Countdown. Then Tom Blum or Blum?
Either one. I pronounce it Blum.
Okay.
Like Plum.
I should have asked before we left here, people. But
right,
you can
right.
tell I'm not man alone. Through the wonders of those Estonian software engineers and their Skype invention. I got, and I've been enlightened to the correct pronunciation, Tom Blum. Welcome aboard, Tom.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, we heard your tune, Post from Rajasthan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Amazing stuff you sent me. We got to thank the Brutal Sound Effects crew for the connect. Thank you much, big, highly populated crew. Now,
yes.
I want to learn about your journey, what led to this, what's the responsibility for this expression. I'm really into it. So please bring us your earliest musical recollection.
Boy, it's hard because my mind doesn't go back that far, but it does in this particular case. I was preparing myself for this question because I'd been told you like to go into the Wayback Machine with the people.
Yeah, I had a guy on last episode, right?
Yeah.
Really nice man, beautiful music up in Oaktown, close to you. He brought me a memory from when he was, in the 2 years old, like in the crib.
Yep.
He saw the bars of the crib and shit.
Yep. Well, mine's similar. I was fortunate to be born into a family with some,
Dave Slusser. It was Dave Slusser.
Dave Slusser, yeah, sure.
Great.
I had a recollection, many recollections from being somewhere between 3 and 5, 3 and 4 years old. My sister is 11 years older than I am. So when I was about 3, she was, you know, 14 or something. And she was totally into rock and roll. You know, she had all the Elvis records and all the Vic Damone and Frankie Avalon and the Letterman. And she used to play that stuff till the wheels would fall off. And I had a rocking horse. And so I'm 3 and I'm on my rocking horse.
You're rocking out on the rocking horse.
Rocking out to her music. And my mom, who was very supportive of all musical endeavors, would, make sure that my sister, you know, got to the record shop to buy the latest 45s. And, as soon as she'd get back, you know, I'd go into the family room where I knew the turntable was and my rocking horse, and we would just rock out. So that's probably
a good one. I like that memory. One. That's very, formative or premonition of what was to come.
It feels just like yesterday to me, whereas things that happened yesterday, I can't remember at all.
I can totally empathize with you, Brother Tom.
I'm at a certain age.
I think you're 4 years older than me. I'm 57. You're 53. Birthday.
No, I'm in the other direction, Mike.
No, but I think you're born in 54.
54. Oh, you're born in 53.
And I'm 57.
Oh, 57. Okay,
so
we're close.
3 years on me.
Yeah, we can share some of the same recollections.
Absolutely.
Probably.
Let me ask you about this pad with the support of Ma. Very happy. Was there musical instruments?
Yeah, that was the other part of it, too. As early recollections, musical experiences, my mother played a little piano. She could sit down and, you know, read some sheet music and play popular songs of her day and our day. And my sister played a little piano as well, but mostly played flute. In fact, she still plays flute. And so I grew up in a family where, you know, my dad was not musical, but my mom and my sister were both musical. And so there was always some kind of music going on in the house. And I used to listen to my mom and my sister. This is probably more when I was like 5. And they would play duets. And, you know, and then, yeah. And so there was a lot of, my mother also loved the big bands. And so she would play a lot of big band music from the 40s. And, you know, and then she'd play a lot of rock with, my sister loved rock. And so, so yeah, there was music going on in my my house.
Well, let me ask you this: did you ever jump on that fucking piano?
Oh well, I was thrown at it at 6.
Oh, you had the lesson? Did you have the? Some people, well, it was a bad ordeal. What?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, I had a mixture. It was a good and a bad experience. I had we had a little spinet in our house because, like I said, my mom played, my sister learned to play a bit, and so when I got to be about 5 or 6. And I was, you know, crying to get a guitar. They said, well, you're going to learn piano first. So I said, oh, God, you know, I hate that instrument. I didn't know it, but I just didn't have any affection for it, even when I, you know, was that age. But I took piano lessons from Mrs. Andrews, who all the kids in my neighborhood took from Mrs. Andrews. And I had a really hard time practicing. But right above our piano was a, like a reproduction print of a Miro, very abstract painting, watercolor. And it was a print of a watercolor, very abstract. And I loved that painting. And I used to look at that, and I would improvise it on the piano. Instead of practicing when the caissons go marching along, I would playing whatever I was interpreting from looking at that Miro. And, you know, my mother never really discouraged it. I would do all kinds of, you know, clustering, and I would, you know, I just had the best time. That was the only time that I found any affinity for the piano, and it was all because of Juan Moreau.
Well, you know, there's a great museum in his name in Barcelona.
I've heard about that. I've never been to that.
That and all the Gaudi stuff makes that fucking happen in Art Town. People absolutely are getting out traveling and seeing stuff. Fuck Disneyland.
Barcelona.
No, yeah, because his work very inspiring. You know, there's something about that one artist can do for another. I've been so inspired by painting, you know, my best friend Raymond Pettibone, and also literature, right? Uh-huh. These levels of abstraction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, why not? Why? It's a trippy kind of communication. What can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, I was, you know, in school, I wasn't in any of the musical, you know, the organized musical parts of the school. But I did, as I said, at a very, so I think in 64, so I was 10, that's when the Beatles were introduced to America, thanks to the Ed Sullivan Show, which you may remember.
I do.
But he was the one who introduced America, you know, widespread to the Beatles in 1964. And I was already well steeped in, you know, rock and roll at that point, and some jazz, some big band. But I just loved the Beatles, and I immediately wanted to get in a band. And so I was about 9 or 10 years old, and I had gotten past my ukulele, which they got me instead of a guitar when I was 6. They couldn't find a guitar small enough for me, so they thought, well, maybe a ukulele. But then I graduated to a steel string acoustic guitar, which was kind of fun. And then I just met these people when I was about, God, I must have been 9, 10 years old, 11 years old. I met two dear people that remained friends. One of them unfortunately passed away, but the other, Dan Warner and Dave Bennett, two very, very talented, very young, in the same age as I was, musicians, and we were all on the same page. We decided when we were 9 that we would form a band. So this was in 63, I guess, or 64. We formed a band. We had a name. It was called The Esoterics. My sister painted the band's name on the bass drum head of Dan's drums, and we started gigging. I mean, we were, you know, we would play outside our garage. That's where we'd practice. The neighborhood couldn't help but hear us. And then we started getting little gigs at, like, the junior
assembly. Your buddy played bass then?
I played bass at that point.
I thought you were playing that steel string.
No, at that point, actually, then I was playing rhythm guitar, right? We didn't have a bass player. We had two guitars and a drummer.
Okay.
And, you know, but we were 9. We could make a lot of noise. It sounded great. So, instead of being, like, in the school band and in the choir, you know, church choirs and things like that, I just went directly to being in rock bands.
That's great.
So
that's great.
I was in rock bands from 9 to about 18.
Okay. Let me play Combustible, and then I want to hear about the first Esoterics gig.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Tom Blum doing Combustible. Then Petra Hayden doing her daddy Charlie wrote this piece called Silence with Egberto Gismonte. And then Hellbeans out from England with Jerusalem Umbrales. Sam Locke Ward with Shit Starter out of Iowa. Iowa City, in fact. The plural of vinyl is vinyls. The Born Shitsters out of Fukuoka. I'm actually, there's some braille bass going on, some miming going on there. I feel like I was in the esoterics as the mime bass player. And then Bob Bucko out of Dubuque, Iowa, love Plasm, love Psalm. There's a slash there, people. The Bombus Brendan Group Therapy, and finally, Impetuous Improv on Rolling Record Cart. That's a title, Tom Blum. Okay, so tell us about the fucking first Esoterics gig.
Well, let's see. We played, I remember we played at a dance for this. There was like an extracurricular organization called Junior Assembly. And Junior Assembly was a thing where they would teach kids how to socialize with one another in a polite manner. So it was learning how to dance, but not rock dance, but, traditional classical dance or whatever. We learned waltzes, or they learned waltzes. And one of the reasons I think I got into bands was because I just couldn't stand the idea of dancing. And if I was playing in the band, I didn't have to dance.
Yeah, understood.
So anyway, the first job we played, I think I must have been about 9, 10, 11, something like that, as were my bandmates, and we played for Junior Assembly.
Were you scared? It was,
no, actually, it was just a lot of fun. And okay. I wasn't there,
you got to tell me, Doc.
I was the least afraid, I had the least stage fright at that very first gig than I've ever had afterwards.
Shows and to go you. So tell me about this bass. When did you get into the bass? When does that happen?
Well, so I neglected to say that even though I was steeped in rock, I just loved guitar, and I loved Andre Segovia. I didn't know who he was at that age, but I heard his music, I heard him performing, and I loved it, and I thought, I'm going to take up classical guitar. So I had this balance of, I'm playing rock guitar and learning bass, but I'm also learning classical guitar I learned from this guy named John McCormick, who was the only classical guitar teacher in my town. And he was the first professional musician that I ever encountered in my life. Someone who actually made a living performing music and teaching. And I thought, wow, what a cool life. That's what I want to do. So I stuck with classical guitar and I played that from about age nine to 18 or so. I got okay at it. But that was really sort of a sidetrack. The rock stuff was, what I really spent most of my time doing. And the bass,
bass. I wanted to know about the bass. Like, what was your first bass?
My first bass, and I saw a picture on your website, and I think we had the same bass. I don't remember exactly what the very first bass was that I had, but the bass that I ended up using and loving the most at first was an EB3, a Gibson 3.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was EBO. I can't remember. The EBO.
EBO had one pickup. EB3 had two pickups.
Right. And I think I started with an EBO, and then I traded it in, and I upgraded to the EB3.
Yeah.
And just a beautiful, like a cherry finish bass. Oh, it's a beautiful bass.
Yeah. I had to go to those for live gigs because my hands were getting sore and they're short scale.
Yeah. It was good for someone like me who had, who was small, I was short and I had small hands and stuff. So that was a very good bass for me. And then much, much later, I ended up getting, I went through a whole litany of basses. I had, Gibsons, and I had a Rickenbacker bass, and I had a Dan Electro bass.
Oh yeah, Masonite.
I had that bass. I can't remember who made it, but it was Lucite and it was clear.
Oh, Dan Armstrong.
Dan Armstrong. Yeah, and that thing weighed like
a ton. Greg Ginn had the guitar version.
Okay. I got rid of that, and I got a Fender Jazz, and that's what I ended up
now,
with.
No, but are you playing bass for other people, or are they your projects?
No, I was playing bass in other bands. Yeah. So I went on with different bands, and at probably about the time I was 12 or so, I think I had switched from rhythm guitar and moved over to bass.
Can I ask you, did you ever compose on the bass?
I never did compose
on
the bass.
Yeah, I find that, but I think that is the future of the bass as a composition tool. I do a lot of it. Can I ask you, what is your connect with music and what we're hearing today?
Oh, well, again, it was through, there were a couple incidences that occurred, but the primary one was when I was 18 and I decided I would venture off to California. And I got accepted to a school there known as CalArts or California Institute of the Arts. I got accepted for classical guitar. It was one of the only schools in the United States that offered a classical guitar major.
Wow.
And so there were might have been like two other schools on the East Coast. But I got accepted into CalArts for classical guitar, and I went there. And the day that I got there, I'd never been to California. In fact, I hadn't really been out of Ohio too much except to go to the East Coast when I was a kid. But I got to CalArts, and the first night I was in the dorm by myself. And the next day, there's a knock at the door. I open the door. There's a fellow who's going to be my roommate. And he walks in with a rather strange-shaped case and a suitcase, and asked him what was in the other case, and he said, oh, it's a synthesizer. And I said, oh, well, you know, I wasn't even sure exactly what it was. I'd heard one, like, on Weather Report, you know. And
Joe
Zawinul, but I'd never actually seen one, and he happened to have the same one that Joe Zawinul had, which was an ARP 2600. So he opened it up, and I think before we'd ever really said much to each other at all, he was just noodling around on it, and I was totally blown away.
What's his name, Tom?
Well, so it turned out the person that I met as my roommate was Curtis Rhodes.
Oh, wow.
Who is one of the preeminent people in computer music these days. I watched him ascend to that level. We've been very good friends I guess now like 50 years.
Well, that's
years
a good connect to have with electronic music.
Oh, I've been so lucky. Let me tell you. So I met at CalArts within the first week I was there. You know, I met, Curtis Rhodes and then Earl Howard, who's another, you know, monster musician and composer, and electronic music guy, as well as the saxophone player and composer. And so they became, you know, they and several other people and I became fast friends. And I just sort of watched everything they were doing and listened and, you know, got an education. And so by the time I was 3 or 4 months into my tutelage at CalArts, I decided I was going to dump the classical guitar, which I had discovered at that point, too, that I had learned a lot of bad habits on classical guitar. And to unlearn them was going to take forever. So and I really... I just love the synthesizer and that notion of being able to make sounds that you'd never heard before or I'd never heard before. And so that's really what bit me. That's what got me into it, was encountering those people. So within the first 3 or 4 months I was at CalArts, I pretty much abandoned classical guitar. I told my...
classical guitar, but guitar period, right?
Yeah, guitar period, and I was no longer playing in bands because now I was at college away from all.
Or even bass, you let go of the bass.
I don't even think I took my bass with me to CalArts.
Okay.
And so I just, you know, I burned a couple bridges there and started building a new one.
Right. And, absolutely.
Yeah. So CalArts was really kind of a turning point for me. It was a wonderful breeding ground. If you had any notion of what you wanted to do already, that was a place that would foster your creativity. And I was very fortunate because when I did switch my majors and got accepted into composition there, my mentor was James Tenney. And
I got to see, Thurston took me to see him conduct a symphony or whatever. These guys were playing regular instruments, brasses and woodwinds, but like with microtones.
yeah. So James was a wonderful, you know, person to just sit around and chew the fat with. I didn't learn a lot of composition specifically from him, but I learned a lot of other things and, you know, really valuable things. And so I was very fortunate. Our musical tastes were somewhat different. But at the point that I met James, he had already gone through a series of work at Bell Labs.
I gotta tell you, we're at the end of the first hour. Why don't you continue with this when we come back for the second hour, Tom?
But sounds great.
We're June 21, 2021. By the way, happy solstice, longest day of the year, people.
Same to you, what?
Okay. Special guest, Tom Blum. Hold tight for hour two. June 21, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
It's hard, there's no more time for us. Who's the boss? I can't be sure of anything, but I'm positive never meant to hurt you. This morning I woke from a dream where everything was broken and it persisted. Understanding, or are you just lost? The aching
Yeah.
Waffle Pedro Show. We start the second hour with Tom Blum, Four Poems, Somewhat. Then Ben Salter with the Tasmania with Departure. Lucas Abel from nearby Sydney, G is for Gout. And then Tom Blum, finally, Pathong. It's a trippy word. I think Vietnamese when I see that. Pathong. Let's get back to the spiel we had going with James Taney.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So I had James Taney as my mentor at CalArts. But I was just, I was just enamored with all this new music I was getting introduced to. I got introduced to a lot of world music at that point and synthesizers. And then there was a computer, that was given to the architecture department of CalArts, but the lead fellow who was going to be dealing with it wanted some help. And so several of us, including Curtis and Earl and me and this other guy, Paul Taylor, we basically ditched the music department, kind of spent a lot of time down in architecture because they had the Data General Mini Nova computer, and we were all teaching ourselves how to use it and program and use it for some kind of musical or graphical applications. And it was a great learning experience, so much so that I realized I couldn't stay at CalArts because my musical craft was going to require a lot of computer knowledge. I could just tell. So I ended up going back to Columbus, Ohio for that summer in 74, and I switched majors to computer science, went to Ohio State, got a computer science and music degree there.
Can I ask you, electronic music, I've had guests on, like David Slusser. Uh-huh. Their early start was actually using a tape recorder.
Yeah. Well, that's what we worked with back in the day, before everything was digital, and really before people were using computers for music. Tape music was really the thing. And in fact, when I started writing music, it was tape music. So you would essentially build your composition up on tape, and you could do multi-tracking and you could do editing. So I used I got pretty facile with a, razor blade and a splicing block.
Yeah.
Wrote a piece in 78 that had something like over 2000 cuts in it, 2000 edits in it.
And people were talking about on the back of the tape is a piece of tape to stick it together. Yeah. This is physical. So something with thousands of edits is incredibly, oh my God.
I think Stockhausen complained that tape music was very backbreaking, and it's actually
heavy lift,
complicated tape piece. You don't know what he's talking about, but it's not a fast process, even if you get really good at it.
but I think maybe it's, I don't know, more to the essential core than. Now I'm not against synthesizer, but this idea of the fake keyboard synthesizer.
Yeah,
where you got, what, a fake string section, a fake trumpet?
Samples, yeah.
First they didn't have the power yet for samples, so they had to, kind of create them out of different, one was called FM, and, frequency modulated. Yeah, they were actually like mathematical formulas, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing about early computer music. I mean, you really, really had to know some math to produce a sound or to, produce any kind of, sequence of sounds. But very rapidly, I would say, within a few years, there was some software available that would hide some of that from you, and you could work at a more musical level and not so much at a mathematical level.
Well, thank God for those software developers, right?
That's where
they're happening. Look, I want to play a duet you got called Duet Pecci.
Uh-huh. So it's a later piece.
Hot for Pedro show. Me and Tom discussing how everybody's a teacher.
Exactly.
And we're always students, right? Life is the fucking classroom. You never graduate, people.
That's true. That's
okay.
True.
We started that chunk of music with Essere un Bacala from Due Pesci, which is Tom Blum with Ron Pelletier. And you want to credit Ron?
Yeah, absolutely. Ron's an exceptionally wonderful jazz drummer and also a DJ. He's been doing jazz programming and DJing in the Bay Area and in Southern California some for his entire life, and was on KCSM and K-Jazz and has had a regular program there for many years. And now he has a podcast on Live 365, I think it's called.
Wow, I tried about 20 years ago when I was starting the show. Me and Brother Matt were trying Live 365. That's why my show is 3 hours, because you had to have a minimum 3 hours. People ask me why my show is so long. But that was one of their requirements. But this is like 20 years ago.
We also heard
Cedric Noel with Nighttime Skin, and then Tom Blum with Reset. So go on with Ron.
So anyway, Ron has a program on Live 365 called, I think it's called Jazz from Gallery 41. He does a daily show there. Live 365 was up 20 years ago. Then it kind of faded away after a while, but then it came back. They got some things worked out. It came back a few years ago, and so Ron mounted his shows up there.
Right, and you told me off air that Ron is the guy who got you into improv.
Yeah, I had never really done improvisation, not with any, you know, I mean, part of composing involves improvising and always has for me, but it tended to be very short stints of things, and I would do a lot of tape editing to combine stuff. But Ron, by the time I met Ron, which was in about 2015 or 2014, I had actually developed kind of an instrument that I could use, a computer-based instrument I could use, and I found that I could, if I hacked it a certain way, I could actually do improvisations with it. So I started working with Ron and a couple other guys, eventually just kind of got down to Ron and I in this duet for percussion and electronics. And I was doing a lot of open miking of his work, and then doing live processing of his drums, and also doing a lot of feedback, but kind of a controlled processed feedback, and learning how to improvise using my instrument, which was kind of like learning the instrument from scratch in many ways. But we did some fun and kind of interesting things, I think, and I learned a lot. And we did that one collection of pieces that's on Bandcamp that you have drawn from there for that one tune. But yeah, then Ron and I kind of went different directions, and so we're not playing together anymore. But I just learned a lot by working with him, and he opened up a world of improvisation to me.
Let me ask you this. Do you use the internet to trade files?
A little bit, yeah. But when we were able to play together, it was live. You know, it was like pre-pandemic.
Yeah, of course.
And we tried, actually, when the pandemic hit and people were sheltering in place and all, we did try very early on to do what we were doing over Zoom, but it
the latency is bullshit, yeah. That's why I say trade files, because...
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. First electronic performance...
That I heard or that
that you yourself did.
Well, I mean, as a kind of a tape music performance, in other words, the pieces were all written and done, and it was a matter of playing them in a space where there were other people. That was probably, I mean, I did one, when was that? That was probably in about 1980, 1981 maybe.
Compare that with stuff that, when you were in your rock and roll music phase.
Well, I mean, there I started playing, you know, when I was 9 or 10.
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course, that's a big difference. But, like, after high school when you were rocking the bass and playing electric guitar and stuff, and you were doing gigs, right? You were helping other bands and performance. And now you do this thing, the man alone, and with electronic stuff.
Yeah. It took me a long time to get to a point where I had a piece. You know, I mean, I would work on these pieces, which I still do, that aren't necessarily live improvisational pieces. They're pieces that I write. They're more like creating mosaics, you know, where I have an overall structure in mind, and then I start building the tiles. The tiles being the individual sounds or sound files or, you know, impulses. And I build each tile. I make each tile. And then I start to lay out the mosaic as a whole, and it's time consuming. It's easier than doing mosaic. Well,
I like this metaphor because this is what I think of the base, grout, to go in between them tiles.
Between the tiles, yeah. So that's a good analogy there. So, you know, with the advent of things like Pro Tools and that, it's very easy to sort of temporarily lay down the ordering of your tiles or your sounds and then change them all around.
Right,
with just a, you know, just a click of a button, essentially, or a move of a mouse.
Yeah, right.
That kind of thing with tape. So it takes a long time when you do that kind of thing with tape. So
you can't imagine, you know, that's my Minutemen days. I remember seeing Ethan James do that. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, June 21, 2021 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Tom Blum. Hold tape for hour three.
Yeah, we all.
June 21, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
That's right.
Well, for Pedro show, we start off the third hour, Tom Blum, Cascade. Then Head Boggle, he was on the show a couple weeks ago. Yeah. A3Y plus PPP minus V. Yeah, great title. Talking about your math people. And then Tom Blum with Things Frankie Heard. There was a scary song by Suicide called Frankie Teardrop.
Mm.
Oh, my God, was that scary? On the first album. That is a scary song. Okay, we got into your composition thing because I was going to ask you about that. How, you know, a lot of people now are using their leashes, right, as like voice memo. And I've started carrying around a little digital recorder. So from what, yeah. I can't remember the little fucking bass lines or melodies and stuff. Do you use any of that stuff? No.
Well, you know. One of the things I discovered pretty early on, I think, even when I was in high school, was the power of everyday sound. The, you know, I got heavily, and still am, I kind of have different musics that I work on, and one of the musics that I work on are what I refer to as audio postcards, which are place-based compositions. They use a lot of field recordings.
Ah, okay.
And so I use a tape recorder or an audio deck or whatever we call them these days. I've been using one since, probably the early 80s. And I was using them much the way people would use a camera or a video camera.
Sure, yeah.
You know? So whenever I would go anywhere, I would just record a lot of the stuff going on around me, a lot of the natural ambiences and not-so-natural ambiences. And then I would start crafting those into compositions.
Yeah, so that you build the vocabulary for the piece by the
yes,
acquiring exactly. That stuff. Yeah.
So, and I was fortunate that the woman that I married in 1985 and met in 82 is not a musician, but has this wonderful open ear. And is very, very supportive of the kind of music that I write, although she's not always in love with it. But she's also got the wanderlust. She's got the travel bug. So we used to travel to far-flung places. I'd take my recorders with me. We'd spend a lot of time recording. And she was very supportive of that. And I'm fortunate, for that. And then, you know, when coming back from a trip, I would just file the recordings away, try to describe them in some way that I could remember what they were, and then I'd start pulling from those to create these kind of audio postcard compositions. But I have also found, like you maybe, that I use my iPhone or my phone as a...
Oh, yeah, mental... I called it a leash. Sorry, that's some Pedro slang.
Yeah, a leash, right. Right. Well, for me, it's more a guide because, you know, I have forgotten more than I've ever known, I think. And so my phone is just a great way to remind me, help me remember things and people's names or, all that stuff. So, you know, I thought a few years ago, I don't need a smartphone. I need a caring phone. I need one that looks after me as I age. So yeah, I use a recorder to collect sounds and also to help me to remember things.
Yeah. I mean, it's helped me a lot because I don't know how many licks I would have lost without this guy. And in the old days, I just showed him to my guy, show it to D. Boone quick enough before I space on.
Right.
I want to play this Fantasia number 2.
شوميشة واش يدنا الكافر فجة من الصيد هي الشمس والقمر
شاء الله
يا العياد بالله ساتي ستمولة اللي خلقه شكون هو الملك هو خليل
شاء الله
واش يدنا قال لهم جمعوا دوك المدينة جمعوا دوك الكفار جمعوك الكفار من اليهود دايروا سيادنا تدخلوا في شرط الله
ان شاء الله ان شاء الله
الى اليوم زيدوا له في الايام وسمي قالوا جابوا شمشان مركوز والشفوع ديالو مردود حتى قالوا هذا الرملين جيبوه له فأمة محمد اخوتي خميس قال له دابا كيفاش قال له دابا شكون اللي غادي شكون غادي يغلبوا شنو عليه هو كينطق الشدو قالوا تبعوا الطريق هذه جاتنا تبعوا بديتنا القامه شنو باش تبقوا
Live from Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Tom Blum with Fantasia No. 2. Then the Plaster Men out of Ithaca, Game We Play. And then finally, Tom Blum with Maroc. Tell me about this Fantasia No. 2.
Well, it's the things I'm doing now are things I refer to as improvisations. So after working with Ron and a couple guys doing some improvisation live, I started doing improvisations by myself and using this instrument that I've developed over the years and people have helped me develop over the years. And so I just started, you know, doing improvisations in my studio, and I'd get a swath of, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of something, and I thought to myself, yeah, that's pretty good. I'll keep that aside. I'll put that aside somewhere. So this year what I've been doing is I've been pulling from those, and I've been using bits and pieces of those improvisations and building them into compositions. So the compositions are sort of, they start with improvisation, but then that gets remolded into something that's structured more the way I want it to be. Sometimes I'll take a whole 5 or 7 minute swath untouched that I created, but I'll tack something onto the beginning or the end of it that fits well, but was taken from another improvisation. So they're composed improvisations. That's kind of why I call them Fantasias, because I think that's somewhat a definition of the Fantasia.
Yeah. Well, you know, the end of Love Supreme, John Coltrane quotes his Alabama, and even wrote it he charted it out on a paper, right, for the band. And he says, you'll bring Alabama in at the end there. So, everything might have a purpose. I mean, they just don't live and die with that piece. It might live, be reincarnated in another one of your pieces.
Absolutely. I often think that there is no end to a sound. I mean, you can work on a sound. I do a lot of sound design. You can work on a sound. You can get it to a point where it fits something you have in mind, or you think, that's really nice. It's done. It's finished. And then, like, 2 years later, you're rummaging around. You find that same sound, but you have some other purpose for it, and you start modifying it again. So it becomes the source for a new sound out, and you can just constantly manipulate and repurpose and rework the sounds that you have already made up to a certain point. So, yeah, sounds never have to be finished.
Right, right. And so the most recent thing we played on the show, was it Fantasia?
I think so. You said you played Fantasia No. 2?
Yeah.
Which is one of these improvisations or compositions. Improvisations.
Improvisation, I like this word.
And
well, what about Maroc?
Well, Maroc is one of the pieces that I wrote. It's what I call an audio postcard. It's more like a journal because it's pretty long. But that was written after traveling in Morocco for 3 weeks with my wife and collecting sounds from around, you know, the...
Are you aware of ZBS Media in upstate New York?
No.
They put out these things like... The most famous was the Jack Flanders series, and with the guy Meatball Fulton, he's still around, an older gentleman. But I first heard this stuff on KPFK, like the Carl Stone stuff, and they call them mind movies. And they have one, and they're like 10 hours, 12 hours. One is called Moon Over Morocco, and they went and found sound. When you're listening to this, you hear the sounds that they, like your postcard. Yeah, well, ZBS.org. If you go there, they've got all kinds of stuff. But Muna, you know, they go to Rio, or they go this thing where the place kind of inform the piece.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds great. I'll check them out. DBS, ZBS?
ZBS. So Z is in zebra, B is in boy, and S is in ship.
Okay.
.org. Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to check that out. Thanks for the info.
Yeah, and it's from, you know, the same thing. Listened to the radio a lot when I was a teenager after going to California from Virginia.
Carl, you mentioned Carl a few times. Carl Stone and I went to CalArts at exactly the same time.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think he's in Tokyo these days teaching, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the last time I saw Carl was, I think, I want to say 2 years ago, which means now it's probably 4 years ago, and he did a... He was at the Electronic Music Festival here in San Francisco.
Beautiful.
doing a live performance.
Yeah, but that guy, man, I owe him a lot because he opened up my mind and you know, all this stuff coming back 40 years later it's for me is really great. Where can people find you on the internet, Tom?
A couple places. I just have put out a collection of sort of legacy works that take us from 1972 to around 2018. There's four collections of these things on Bandcamp. And so you can go to Tom Blum at tomblum.bandcamp.com, and it's T-H-O-M-B as in boy, L-U-M as in man, .bandcamp.com. And then I have my own site, which is tomblum.com.
Yeah, which is important because there's probably links to the Bandcamp there. So you go there, people, T-H-O-M-B-L-U-M.com. Find out more about Tom. He's got all kinds of righteous music. Really, big honor to have you on the show. Keep on keeping on. When you get some new stuff, you know, as you add to this thing, you come back on the show, we can play and talk about it.
I absolutely will. Okay. And I'm honored to be on your show, Mike. Thank you so much.
Right back at you. People, it's been June 21, longest day of the year, 2021 edition of WAP Pedro Show. Keep you powdered up.